Welcome to our podcast episode. We are a group of five Hanken students with a strong interest in sustainability and organizing for sustainable change. In today's episode, we have a very special guest with us, Simon Gripenberg.
We are really super happy to have you here today, Simon. Welcome. And before that, we also want to present us all. So my name is Jasmine.
My name is Nicole.
I am Hanna.
And I'm Felix.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself, Simon? What are you doing?
Yeah. Okay. Firstly, I want to thank you all for being invited. This is an exciting subject. And I'm an artist working with sculpture, mainly using a lot of recycled materials. And the focus is quite a lot on environment and energy, such topics. Back in the days, I studied engineering for a couple of years. So I guess that's why that's visible in my art also. So in my projects, I quite often make comments about climate change and issues about the environment, but also make ideas about thinking in alternative ways, like focusing on solutions, not only the problems.
Okay. That sounds familiar. We were had a question based on that. We saw that you were very active on YouTube and where you share knowledge and invite people to rethink the ways they are doing things. And we watched some of your videos, and you are really innovative in those. We were wondering, could you tell us about where you get inspiration for these videos? And what the goal of these are?
Yeah, a lot of the inspiration comes from nature itself. I'm quite excited by this biomimicry, this word that means that you get inspired by nature, that nature has invented a lot of things for us already. So that's a great source of inspiration.
Could I ask, when did this start, this interest in the nature? Has it always been a part of you, or has it been like something you suddenly got inspired by?
Yeah, I think it has always been an interest. I like spending a lot of times outdoors in the forest and at the sea. So it has been like a natural way of getting inspiration. And then what I want to achieve, I think my goal is to somehow inspire and encourage. We're speaking a lot about the climate crisis and biodiversity loss and quite heavy topics. So I want to partly turn the discussion around, like in a playful way, showing possible ways of thinking or carrying out things. And therefore using a lot of recycled materials, showing that we don't always need to use virgin materials.
Yeah.
Except for you are publishing a lot of material on YouTube, you have your own platform, Simon Shares. Can you tell us a little bit about that one?
Yeah, that's a really, really simple website. I'm not, I guess it's necessary nowadays to be online in some way, but I don't like spending so much time on social media, and I think it interrupts a lot, and at least for me, it's like kind of disturbing the concentration and also creativity in some ways.
Okay.
But therefore, I just have the simonshares.org website. It's like really, really simple. Just some pictures now and then from projects.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. We were also super interested about kind of the connection between your Finnish-Swedish identity and the Sami identity, and how it has kind of inspired your travels and thus also inspired you to write the book, Sápmi Svensk Finland. So yeah, we were also super interested in hearing more about this.
Yeah, yes, since I'm Swedish speaking, belong to the Swedish speaking minority in Finland, I feel there's some kind of connection. We think about the Sami people, they are also a minority, but then we also must remember that they are indigenous people. But like for our when we speak Swedish in Finland and we're a minority, then the language I think connects us. The language is really important for us and for the Sami people. And then I have been to a couple of residencies, and one of the residencies was in Sápmi, in the Norway, part of Sápmi. And there I got interested in the Sami culture and got to learn more and started reading, watching films and listening to some Sami music. And the more I got to know, the more engaged I got, noticing that the Samis, as they are the only indigenous people in the whole of Europe, and how they have been treated throughout history. So that kind of got me engaged in that question.
When you said that kind of language is what connects the Finnish-Swedish people with the Sami people, is it so that the Sami language doesn't have the same status as Swedish has in Finland, or what's the kind of situation there?
I don't know every detail, but I think, of course, they can speak nowadays their own language. But if you go back in history, it was they were forced to speak Finnish. And it was like a whole generation lost kind of their identity connected to the language due to that. So, but I don't know every detail. The situation nowadays, but at least they can speak their language and are trying to take it back. I think there are a lot of courses arranged in Sami people, for example.
Yeah. I was thinking, because during this course we have talked about indigenous people and how they kind of care for the lands, and that's how they're or how it relates to kind of the climate crisis and loss of biodiversity and sustainability. So what's like, is there a connection also between the Sami people and sustainability and kind of organizing for sustainable change?
Yeah, I think that's a good point you got there. I've gotten the picture that they are more closely connected, a lot more closely connected to nature than we are. If we speak about the rest of the Finnish society, for example, living close to nature and traditions and so on. So I think when it comes to solutions also, we should stop up and listen a bit more to what the indigenous people have to say.
Yeah.
What is your opinion about the proposal for the Sametingslagen? We have last week on the news here in Finland that this law will not be renewed during this mandate here in Finland. Do you have an opinion about this or some thoughts?
Okay, my personal opinion, it's really, really sad that it didn't pass as this time, as it hasn't times before, since since they don't get their rights, like should have the right to define who gets to vote in the Sami election and decide those things themselves.
Have you been following this proposal or these like the with the law anything more, or is it just like what's talking about in it in newspapers and things like that?
Yeah, I've read some about it. I've followed the discussion, so it feels like it's gotten so political, the discussion, and don't actually is now about the right of the Samis. It's more about a populistic battle between other politics.
Okay.
That's my what I think I understand.
I would also like to know, I mean, you have like traveled through Sápmi and met a lot of Sami people, and I was wondering if you could tell us about like some kind of meaningful encounter maybe that you've had with the Sami people, or something also that maybe you have written about in the book.
Yeah, I made a kind of road trip in the beginning of the summer. I visited many museums in Sápmi and met some Sami people also, made some of the interviews on site and others with Zoom on the internet. But for example, in Kautokeino, I had a meeting with an artist. It was really interesting. We discussed for several hours, and I got to learn a lot about the kind of more modern culture, modern art in Sápmi. And that was, for example, a discussion that opened my eyes. And I realized I've gotten myself earlier kind of a stereotype picture of what Sápmi and the Samis are. So I think that was really healthy for myself. And also, the word minority that I've used in my project during the process in the discussions, I realized that even though Sami people are mathematically a minority, I nowadays only want to talk about them as indigenous people, not using the word minority, for example. And now we come back to the language. Another word I think about is wild or wilderness. That's a word I have used myself earlier in a positive kind of way, like untouched, like beautiful nature. But through these meetings and interviews, I have realized that it's a bit problematic word, the wilderness, because it's people have been living for thousands of years in Sápmi. For them, it's not so wilderness, but using wilderness gives the opportunities for corporations to colonize and extract minerals and such.
Is there something we can do as kind of students to kind of better the situation for the indigenous people in Finland? Are there some like more, I guess, simple things we can do kind of better their situation?
Yeah, I think one good thing to do is like listening to them, listening to their stories and reading about their culture. And there are some really great movies made by Sami film producers. For example, Eat Nameamet, it's a movie. I think it's our silent struggle, I think it's called in English, that you can see on Yle Arena, for example, that gets you into the situation. So I think that's a good way to start to educate oneself and learn more about it. And if one wants to get active, it's of course possible to write about it in newspaper, talk to people. But then I think it's you have to be careful, of course, when you're not, as I am not a Sami myself, like it's a bit dangerous telling someone else's story. So the best is, of course, involving, if possible, Sami people themselves, so they can tell their own story.
Yeah, thank you for this. I was also thinking when we're talking about what we can do as students, because during kind of the course, the topic of the present and very much increasing climate crisis has been kind of frequently discussed. And all of the guest lecturers that we have given their tips of somewhat simple actions that students can take in their daily lives in order to kind of combat or try to minimize the crisis. So when we think about like sustainability related issues, so what do you think we can, what are some actions we can as students take to improve the situation and kind of organize ourselves for sustainable change?
Yeah, that was a good question. Students, I realize you know a lot about these topics, climate change, and it's been an active topic.
Yeah.
As you study, it wasn't when I, back in the days when I studied. So I think I get the picture. You are really well educated. You know a lot about these topics already. So what you can do, I think, is asking questions and lifting up the topic. And of course, it's like this classical advice, maybe eating a little bit less meat and like traveling by train instead of flying. And but if you see the whole picture, I think we have this really big multinational corporations, and I think there has to be like a major shift in our ways of thinking and doing things, how we arrange the system of economy and the market. And you know more about those things than I do, but I think we have to have a transition in the system on a larger scale, and then it's good if we, as individuals and students, we keep asking these questions to our politicians and to the adults, and showing that these themes and questions are really important.
Yeah. So kind of more like, instead of aiming for profits and kind of seeing things from this human superiority perspective, kind of more, I guess, connect with nature and try to become one with nature, that we're all kind of living in the, or all of us have the same kind of position in the world. And that's maybe also why the Sami topic is super relevant in this, as they are kind of more, I guess, familiar with nature and not familiar, but they I guess they have a respect for it that maybe us as individual don't have or haven't had during the last decades, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's something that we have lost, like in the Western society, this belonging to, and we not realizing that we're just one of the species and how much we depend on all species. Every part is important. But I think it's encouraging to see that there are a lot of things happening also with circular design. And I read yesterday in the newspaper about a repair cafe. It was actually talking about students. It was a school in Ostrobotnia who arrange every now and then repair cafes, so people can bring their, if they have something that's broken, they can try to fix it, learn how to fix it. And just as an example, because I feel students and young people, you shouldn't have to think about these things all the time, but also enjoy. There's so much beauty in on the planet and in life, and yeah, not having to worry about the climate all the time. So it should be, I think, we managed to put more pressure on politicians and adults. We should take responsibility.
Yeah, I think it's pretty nice to see that we see a pretty big change in values from the older generations to the new Gen Z and millennials, that you see that, for example, in the workplace as well, that younger people and younger generations are value more of the sustainable and loyalty. And there's a pretty big shift from the, I like a term that was used in the course, mainstream planning. I have never heard it before, but I think it pretty much describes it pretty well, the like capitalist way of thinking on everything and just measuring without taking everything into consideration in its context. So it's, I think, and I try to be so positive myself, at least, that to think that younger generations are willing to take the steps in order to achieve a sustainable future. And some are more inclined to do it, some are less. And probably some just needs the first steps to do that, some smaller, like first baby steps, so to call it. So do you have any like smaller things that are surprisingly effective that you can do in everyday life?
For example, what should I say? Like owning things. I think my generation, we got used to buying everything, and as soon as we think we need something, we buy it. So I think in the common life, like the library is a brilliant place, I think, instead of course, if you have some favorite books, you can buy them, but like you using public services and consuming less, because I think that doesn't necessarily give you a poorer life, but on the opposite, you get, because if you take the connection between money and time, if you buy something expensive, you have to earn it, to work a lot. But if you, like in the everyday life, using the library, going by bike instead of, maybe you don't have to buy a car, that saves you a lot. Also time that you can spend in nature, or and think about your generation and the younger ones. Interesting this about, I read this term, quiet quitting. You heard of it probably. Like wanting to have a simple life and being like people appreciate what you do. So I think that's kind of voting by using your feet also.
Yeah. To take it back to studies and the school system and education in that sense, do you see any kind of, I don't means, but how to say, anything that could be implemented in for example, already in elementary school or in like earlier stages of life that could improve the mindset and embrace the sustainable ways of thinking and this like, not minimalistic, but sufficient consumer behavior or a sustainable consumer behavior? Are there like any things that could be implemented in early life educational system?
Yeah, I think there are quite many things. If you think about early childhood education, I think it's great that they have many projects, do things outdoor. There are these also communities that have arranged so the child are entirely outdoors during the days, just taking a nap inside and then playing the whole day. And I think that gives like a totally different relation to the rest of the biosphere. If you don't have to sit on the chair inside the whole days.
We actually have a teacher here today, Hanna. So maybe you can also, tell us the things that maybe you're already doing, and maybe as we have Simon here, who's into creative sustainability and arts and stuff. So do you think also, Hanna, that this is something that you could, have, for instance, in your class and or with the children that you educate? Or is it something that you're already doing?
Well, we are, my class is the first graders, so they are very young, but we are using quite much like material that is recycled. And that is very much something that every week we are doing crafts, for example, with recycled materials. And as a teacher, we discuss this planet and climate change with the students quite often, because it's a topic that is it's something we can visibly see in the nature happening, and it's something also that the children are quite curious about. So I, from my experience, I think the school is from primary age, it's so important to mold and give information to the young minds, and also to teach them like problem solving, that we should not be content with the problems, but we should like take small steps and do stuff that we can try to like find solutions for the problems that we see. So therefore, when I saw the videos you had on YouTube, that was something that I acknowledge, and it was something that I think we could do in the classroom, like having a solution and finding many ways of using that one solution.
Okay, that's really interesting, and I think
I can give one example. So toilet paper, like the rolls, we are using them so often in every project.
Okay.
Yeah. So stuff like that, I think it's quite much about the mindset. You're like learning to think in ways, in like, okay, how can I use this? How can I use this? How can I implement this? So it's, I think like sustainability and climate change is quite much about like mindset and teaching that kind of mindset of problem solving. But I rambled quite much. Did you have a question?
I think it was really interesting what you said and about using recycled materials, because I think it has so many advantages. You come up with new ideas, new ways of doing things, and being a producer instead of a consuming new materials, and then you save money. It's cheaper, and you save nature.
Yeah,
recycled materials. So there are so many perspectives to it, I think.
Yeah, and also it's like teaching that kind of circular economy, that we find new ways of using things. So I would say in primary school we are doing quite much already, and it's in the also in the läroplanen.
Curriculum.
Yeah, but if you have like ideas on how we could be maybe more mindful and maybe in using like some right terms or something. Do you have any ideas? I would gladly take them on if you have.
Yeah, a good question. I don't know if I have any answers, but one thing about in common about doing projects, I think it's important with the playfulness.
Yeah.
And there are not any wrong or right answers. That through mistakes we learn a lot, I think.
Exactly.
Because when I was myself in school back in the days, I remember it was quite a lot about making the right thing and being correct. But I think like through playfulness and doing mistakes every now and then, that we learn a lot from it, and we can also sometimes get solutions.
Exactly.
New ideas, yeah, from the mistakes. Yeah.
And that's something that has been like implemented also in corporate life nowadays, like learning about mistakes and not like shaming mistakes or like trying to hide them, but we are trying to learn and learn as organizations too.
Okay.
And I really like the way you said like playfulness, because like by playing and by creating and by problem solving, we really do find solutions. So we should incorporate that more, both in the school and maybe also in the workplace. I don't know.
That's great.
I think playing is such a, like, it's a word used all too often, I think, because all ages needs to play. And I think playing is actually, when you play, you actually one of the few times express your like creativity in another way you usually don't. So I think it's really fascinating to actually think about, and nice to see that this becoming a larger part of the educational system and organizational life as well, that we are like supposed to try and play with things and just try out to be innovators in a sense.
Simon, I have a question. Like when we talked about the businesses and how they adapt to the sustainability thing, but I mean, I come from the Asia and not European part, so I know that we crave a lot for, not we in the sense like all the business usually try to be practical and hence maximize the profits in general. So my question to you is like, how can such businesses be encouraged to adapt to more sustainable practices, or let's say, and what role does consumers play in promoting sustainability in such kind of a corporate world?
That's a good question. Because in the small scale, it's of course good to play a lot, but if you have the big picture on the market, you need of course to be realistic also. But so what should I say about that? I think there are interesting like examples of companies already that when people are getting aware, I think the awareness is really, I'm a bit optimistic about that now. People know about climate change, for example, and as they start demanding companies to take the responsibility and questioning products that don't fulfill these things. I'm kind of optimistic that we already are seeing companies through competition, if we use the word competition, like you have to show that you care, and I think hopefully with transparency, if this continues, if you have a big company, you have to be transparent about the energy use, the material use and such. And then as consumers are being more aware, I think there's a loop. I don't that wasn't a good question, good answer.
It's fine. Like so on the similar lines of that, like in order for a company to be transparent, like it depends from company to company again, right? So for example, a car manufacturing unit will have a different kind of utilization of energy. When you see a textile or garment industry, it's different again. So are there any kind of like a generalized new technology or innovation that could help us achieve more sustainable future?
Like the technology or?
Yeah, it can be like, for example, we have UN SDG, that's more like a policy kind of goals. But is there any kind of a developed technology which we can apply across all the frames of domains, like not just limiting to one particular domain in general?
Yeah, like on a common level, this is my personal yeah. opinion, but I think as we have built the system, it relies a lot on high tech and non-transparency. So in my art projects, I play with low tech. And I think there's a question about democracy also, that if people can, as we talked about earlier, can learn to fix things, and you have where it's possible to make products simpler, so they should be repairable. And because if you think about a lot of high-tech projects, you have this planned obsolescence, is it so in English, with green products that aren't made to last, so and you can't fix them yourself, so you have to buy a new. So I think if the technology would be like more democratic, so you wouldn't always have to rely on buying the new project, but that's of course the idea of the consumerist society. So in my opinion, there's still a big problem in the core of how we are manufacturing and consuming things.
I mean, kind of rethinking the whole structure and the way that people are kind of perceiving, I guess, their everyday lives. And I think that, I mean, we're still talking about quite drastic changes. And I feel like it's usually that, like, humans as a society react often when it's too late or when the consequences are already getting super bad. And we're thinking, as I said, about, like, or this is about changing kind of the fundamentals of, like, I mean, businesses and the modern society. So do you think that we will see this type of change and these measures kind of when it's, I guess, too late? Or do you think it will happen soon?
I'm hopeful, kind of a way. I think we're seeing many changes, like we talked about circular economy or designing in new ways. But then this is of course my own opinion. I think like the whole economic mindset, this thinking about growth, that we have to rethink it totally. I'm not, you are better into that topic.
Actually, we have in this course, or as a business student, you talk a lot about regrowth and things like that. And with this course, we have like had to like think a lot different about like degrowth and things like that. So actually, we are pretty new at that thing too, but if you have anything to talk about.
Yeah, and it's a really hard question, because of course to have wealth we have to have of course a market and an economy, but I think I'm a little bit pessimistic about because we are so stuck with the growth paradigm that was like decades ago. If you take some E.F. Schumacher, this economist who wrote this Small is Beautiful, and Tim Jackson, Prosperity Without Growth, and was it, I think, Serge Latouche, this French economist, Farewell to Growth, that there have been many great economists, writers arguing for these questions for long, but I think it's not only as humans, but it's like the system, it's so stuck in this old paradigm. I don't have any answer to that, but
that's actually true of what you said, Simon, because if I may talk like specifically in Latin American context or the Asian context, most of the countries are not switching to sustainable production, because like if they try to do that, or if they want to do that, they need to have initial sunk costs. I mean, a lot of investments initially for that to happen. And again, if you're not providing that means like it's like the cost of a product which is eco-friendly. For example, I wanted to start a textile firm which is based on eco-friendly material, but the initial costs are very high and the consumers wouldn't definitely prefer, like, how is it in Europe? So what happens with that is like as the initial costs are high, the market goes low. And when the market goes low, all the countries which are trying to put money in the country, it's like not willing to do so. And as a whole, like the countries, let's take India, it will be losing a lot of chunk of FDI investors, and they don't want to switch to the sustainability because of that. Yeah. Now multiplying with Africa, Asia and Latin America, and that's the point we are struck at, in my opinion.
Yeah. And I think if you take the whole picture, go back in history with colonialism and this injustice like globally, that there were this is so many like old issues, of course.
So is there any way that we can measure the progress on sustainability, and what kind of metrics would be good, like even if it's a smaller version? We have to check always whether we are going in the right path or not, and especially with the policies that we are taking, or like the policy changes that are coming in, we never know that is it a good way, the outcome is a better consequence than the previous one or not. So are there any measures in progress which can actually track and give the right indicators of the progress?
I don't know that much about that topic, but like measuring, of course, this old way of, if we talk about economics, is this GDP in English?
Yeah.
BNP. So of course, if you think about alternative ways of measuring prosperity and health and taking into account other factors, so there has, of course, been efforts to try to measure things in better ways, taking into account prosperity and nature, the environment. But I don't know that much about those things, so I probably can't answer your question.
Do you have, I will go back to maybe more and talk about the minorities, because that's maybe your main interest. Do you have something you want to like add, something to say about it more, something you want to like highlight for our listeners or something like that?
About minorities, like
about this. The Sami people or the Finnish speaking minorities.
I think it's minority. It's of course listen to minorities and to keep up the if we talk about the diversity of people and not only thinking about the biosphere, but giving room for different perspectives and cultures, ways of seeing things. And I, when it comes to that, I'm hopeful, as you are younger students. I think there has, I don't know if I'm wrong, but it feels like it has been like a mind shift over the generations, that you grow up in a more diverse society where there's more room to be oneself, and hopefully also giving more space listening to minorities and indigenous people.
Yeah, I think it's really important that we have a broad mindset and have a big like awareness about what's happening in different cultures and things like that.
Is there kind of something that, I mean, we have talked or we have asked a lot of questions, but is there something that you still would like to kind of discuss? We don't have to, we can cut this part out from talking about this, but like, is there something that you think we should still discuss? I mean, we haven't really touched upon decolonization, but I guess, I mean, this has been more focused on kind of, I mean, we focused on creative innovations and how to implement them in your daily life, and then more about maybe kind of the business mindset and how it's maybe changing or how it should change. And then we have discussed again about the indigenous community and I mean the Sami people in Finland. But is there something that you still think that we should kind of cover here that we haven't?
As you mentioned the word colonization or decolonization, I think that's quite an interesting word in itself, thinking about colonization that can or have been done in many ways, many directions, of course, and that could be, could talk for an hour about that maybe, thinking about food and clothes and energy and probably also colonization of childhood, as some people talk about, that we are, young people have to grow up really fast. Colonization of language and such, and how to decolonize by thinking, analyzing oneself, what I buy, what I use, like materials and consumer goods and such. Thinking about from Finnish perspective, of course, having colonized in different ways, but it's also interesting now with this, for example, this huge wind power projects that they have, that companies from abroad plan to build really big windmill farms. So maybe the perspective gets turned around, and with mining and such. That this is like an open question, that might it be that we will get colonized in the hunt for minerals and renewable energy. So I think the colonization and decolonization word has so much in it.
Thank you for your time and effort. It has been like really good to like talk to you. We have got a lot of more like information and things like that. So thank you, Simon, from my part. And do you guys wanna say something?
Thank you.
It was safe. Now, you can say, Felix.
yeah. So Simon, I would just thank you for answering the questions and for the knowledge you shared with us. It was really amazing. And coming from an outside perspective, I never knew about Sami people earlier, but yeah, now I'm aware. And I think maybe that's the gap that we should overcome, just not about Sami people, be it about different kind of indigenous people, learning about them and spreading awareness about them.
Yeah. Thanks to you all. And I apologize for my English being a bit rusty. I seldom speak English like here in Jakobstad. So I hope you got something.
It went well.
Okay.
Yeah, and good job.
And you can cut away the parts where I get stuck.
Yeah. Yes, thank you. It was really nice to hear your thoughts. Yeah.
Yeah, and thank you for your interest and questions. And I have to point out that when you talked about knowledge, that part of what I said is, of course, also my personal point of view. So.
I think it's okay to have some personal opinions too.
Yeah.
That's just, there's a room for that too in this.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. It's been super insightful.